Our meeting today is to consider the committee's report on the strategic plan and the budget goals of the Department of Transport. That, when we look at that, we also look at the strategic plan of the entities. When we have concluded with that, we will then adopt the report on the strategic plan and the budget goals of the Department of Transport. We are debating on the 25th, which is next week on Wednesday, and we can't then debate without the adoption of the report, that is why then today we are sitting to consider the report. May I then have the views in terms of whether members have read the report and are ready to just go to the deliberation, or you will require some time to go through the report?
As for me, I've not gone through the report. I would not know whether the majority of the members have. And if the majority have not, I would request that we get at least a little bit of time to quickly go through it.
We value your input, even if other members have gone through the report. If you had not read it, we still allow some time to go through it. And I also read documents many times, so I will use that opportunity to reread. How much time there would you require?
Does this mean that?
Sorry, sir. Does this mean that other members have read the report?
No.
Okay. So that they also have an input in terms of the time. Because when I used to be a student, I was taught reading speed. So I'm devastating in pace in terms of reading. So I might leave them behind.
Chairperson, I think we do need to read it. Can I just ask a question? We have only given this morning. Am I correct?
No.
No, I missed something. When did we get this? Well, members said they got it in their pigeonhole when they came to the office this morning.
No, they didn't collect it yesterday. It was there yesterday.
Okay.
Let us then agree on time. 30 minutes? Mm-hmm. Or an hour?
No, not an hour.
Okay. 30 minutes.
Okay. Mm.
come up with an alternative post.
If I may start on page 1, point bullet number 2, the mandate of the department. I think that before we even come to that, we need to say what the department defines itself as. I'm saying that before we even come to the mandate, we also need to capture the centrality of the department in terms of social and economic development. Or we can put that as part of the mandate that it also has to facilitate the department has to provide the infrastructure in such a way that it enhances social and economic development. And it's not captured here.
I think it's in one of the points of the game.
I do get what you want to say, because I thought your first opening remark was quite in order. It's just that now, because when you said the department needs to define itself as a custodian, or whatever what you wanted to say, I thought you would elaborate on that so that I get it very clear. Because it needs first to define itself, what is this department for? Then followed by its mandate in terms of the constitution, what is expected. I think maybe it's just the English that is not coming very clear. But I do get your thrust of the statement that you wanted to say.
The department does define itself as such. It defines itself as the heartbeat for social and economic development. And I am saying that on this report, that doesn't come out, that the department is actually the heartbeat for social and economic development. And if that doesn't come out, it then creates a situation where, when we are looking at all the programs, we will not be able to see how those programs relate to that definition.
I think that's correct. It must provide the infrastructure for social and economic development in the country. I mean, that's it's already in the strategy, so we must just put it as a line.
That is actually its key mandate. Yeah. It is to provide the infrastructure for social and economic development in the country. Thank you. Are there any other points on page 2? I would prefer, instead of having bullets, maybe we number, we put numbers on the department overseas, the following public entity, even if we put those in Roman figures, so that we are clear as to how many. If we put them in numbers, it helps us to see whether there is one that has been left out. On page 2. After the bullet administration, the paragraph after that, I agree with what is written here, but then there is an observation that goes with that. Yes. The observation that goes with that is the slow pace in which the department moves. You can't have a department that is restructuring itself from 2009. We are now 2012. Still restructuring. Can we talk about that? How long does it take to restructure? Honorable
Chairperson, mine would be is to say that we need to have some kind of a time frame for the department when it implements this program for the restructuring. Because really, the pace at which it goes is a bit slow. It could take one financial year. Otherwise, more than that, it's something else. I would propose that we attach some time frame in the endeavor to restructure.
It is not possible for us to adjust the time frame, but we could raise this as an issue that we can't have that the restructuring process, as much as we agree with the restructuring, as captured here, that the new structure occurs well for the creation of jobs, the development of the country's urban and rural communities, as well as the improvement of the logistics, but it can't take forever.
So I just want to check whether, if we say within the financial year, is it too much to attach that kind of a time frame, without saying 6 months or 2 months, but within a financial year? Because I'm looking at the restructuring, starting from the organogram of the department, which needs to be approved, its entities, maybe because of the laws that will impact on that restructuring. But surely it can be more than two or three financial years without any finality, they are saying. But I'm proposing if one financial year, is it not too much for a person?
What I'm saying is that in terms of the rules of parliament, we can't be specific as a portfolio going to say within this period of time. We can say they should consider.
Thanks, Chairperson, to add on what you are saying. Maybe if we can also say that the delay in the restructuring is affecting service delivery in other areas of the, in other sections of the department. So if they can do it faster, I don't know.
We could start by noting that it has taken so much time, and then recommend that that process needs to be short-circuited. Maybe we are very, we are not lenient to the department, because it's not only this one that they are taking it at a snail pace. It looks like we need to shake it up. I agree with the, it's a pity here, it's not allowed in parliament, it's not a parliament rule. But really, if we don't give them time frame, look what they've done to the transport. It looks like maybe we're too soft. We need to, I don't know what can we do. That then takes us to the work of the whipper. Yes? Okay. Agoti, you can take this to WIPAR in terms of what is it that we can say and what is it that we cannot say as Parliament to do. Because the fact that we can't prescribe to them what to do by when is a hindering factor on our side. We see the problem, but we still leave it to them to correct it. And what is tying us, preventing us from doing so, are our own rules of Parliament. So it gives then those that are serving in the whippery to go and talk about that in the whip committees and highlight that this experience of a department that takes too long and then we can't as Parliament prescribe to them to say finish this by such and such a time is then a hindering factor.
Chairperson, that is technically true, but you know, SCOPA exists under the rules of Parliament, and SCOPA holds people to account and says, excuse me, where's the money? Where's the staff? Why haven't you done this? Why haven't you done that? So we might not be able to say by the 23rd of November you must shut this process, but we have quite a number of powers to call the minister to come here and answer. We can call the DG here to come and answer. We can call officials in the various entities here to answer. We do actually, as a committee, have significant powers. And we can write in this report that we request the minister to do 1, 2, and 3. Obviously, we can't make it a demand, but we can write in the report, we request the minister to complete this process by the following date, or we request the department to give us feedback on the completion of this process by the following, because they must come here by a certain date. The date we can set is they must come and answer us by a certain date, even if we can't set a date forcibly that they must complete the work. We can certainly set a date to force them to come and answer. You know, we would like to see you complete this process and please come and answer to Parliament by the end of the financial year. You know, that's the way you word it, and then they still must come here and give us the answer.
Yes, those are two different things. We are achieving one and the same goal, but we are not prescribing the date on which they should, because that is what we are not allowed to say. We can set a date on which they have to report to us on the progress made on that. But we can't prescribe a date on which they have to finalize because we are tied. We can't do that. And that is what I'm saying to Honorable Sok, to say, as a whip, maybe it's something that he can take back to the whippery to say, in performing our oversight work, the fact that we cannot say to them as Parliament, they should finish this by such and such a time, poses a problem in a sense that even if we call them to come and report, they would report like we have been asking them, we have been talking to them about the scholar transport over and over again. But still, they have not finalized the scholar transport because we don't have the power to say to them, finalize this by such and such a time. And also, we have no recourse to say, if you don't finalize it, then we take that and do it ourselves. We don't. Honorable.
Chairperson, I understand what you're saying, but I've noted it. You see, on another technicality, I would have thought that, conventionally speaking, that for every financial year, when a department submit a plan for a request of funds for that particular plan, they will execute their mandate within that financial year. Hence, I was moving to say, if you are allocated so much funds for that particular financial year, you will execute that. So when we speak within the confines of a financial year, so that they finalize that. But I understand what you're saying, because at the back of my mind, I also understand that there is a PFP, certain clauses or rules, 38, which also say your turnaround payment or whatever is that you need to do financially, you must do that within 30 days or so. I was trying to broaden my mind in around those clauses that have some time frames. But now, it's not about funds, it's about policy. And in that regard, you are saying that we must request, we must raise the matter with the group part. We'll do some sort of thing.
So, this is an observation. It's, you have to guide us as to whether we can put it under observation. So that will fall under the observation, but also we can't observe and then have no recommendation.
Yeah, I was thinking along those lines that, I mean, after an observation, there should be a recommendation.
And what would be the recommendation then? I think Mr. Oris, Honorable Oris, has captured it when you were to actually make an observation that the department is taking too long to restructure itself, but then we have to recommend on how to rectify that. And you had.
Yes, Chairperson, I think what we must do is request the Minister and the Department to complete this process urgently, and we will call for feedback in this committee by a certain date. So the date is when we will request the feedback, not the date in which the work must be completed. So it gets us out of that legal technicality, but it sends a clear message to the Department that we're going to make their life a bit miserable if they don't sort this out. You know, it's allowing us a legal way to irritate them until they finish the work. We say, so the wording says, we request 1, 2, and 3, and we would like feedback by this date. So it's a request, not a demand. But the demand is the feedback, not the actual work completion. So we request 1, 2, and 3 done, which is that urgently they must finish the restructuring process, and this committee will be requiring feedback by the end of the financial year or a certain date or whatever. I think that wording will make it legal, but put pressure.
But on this particular issue, the manner in which this is put on this paragraph, if one reads it, it would look as if that process has been completed. Is it so?
The restructuring was done. That was what informed the new modes in terms of how they were operating, in terms of the new modes for the transport. SIPO is here. SIPO is the process finished. So completed now the structure.
Okay, thanks and good morning. My apologies for coming late. I just came from another meeting. The new structure came into place on the 1st of November last year, in 2011.
Yeah. The new structure also talks to the filling of vacancies. The new structure will talk to the filling of vacancies with adequately skilled people. When we met with the human resource, we identified that there were a number of vacancies that had not been filled, but also we raised the issue of the department being an engineering competent department, and we are not seeing those skills in the department.
Okay, thanks, Chair. What one can say is that when the new structure came in, effectively it means that there was a change in terms of the focus of the department to a more modern approach point of view. But what has been largely been happening is because you then had people that you had certain units, for instance, a policy unit which was central, that was then done away with and it was put into modes. So what you then have is that there is a matching and placing process that has been happening. You might have observed that there's, in the last couple of months there has been advertisement for chief director, more high level posts that have been put out.
Not in specifics so that we don't waste a lot of time on this. We have maritime. Okay. In terms of the new structure, do we have a maritime competent PDG? A person who has an experience in maritime. It's one thing to restructure and have an organogram. It is another thing to fill the vacancies with the type of skills that are required to lead that particular area of responsibility.
Well, Chair, what I can say is that in terms of DDGs themselves, well, one cannot then perhaps confine himself to say in the matching and placing in the appointment of DDGs there was a certain criteria that was made, for instance, that will go according to the recommendation that you're putting on the table. You know, from what we have, I think because you also had existing DDGs that came from another structure, so there was a process of to say let's then put them where they are. So I cannot really want to say to the committee we have a competent person who's got these key qualifications or relevant qualifications in a specific field. That I cannot say.
That is the issue we are raising, that although it would look here in terms of this paragraph that the process is complete, and your response of November 2011, this was the structure approved by the department, okay? The structure then is filled with, when you put a structure, you then have vacancies. And this year, we called human resource, and what they presented to us showed that there were a number of vacancies that were not filled. That is one point. But the second point was the skills level in relation to the core function of the department. The department is an engineering competent, supposed to be the department, which would then take away the over-reliance of the department on consultants. If I can show you the organogram of KZN that I have seen, it's the HOD. Below the HOD is a firm of consultants. PD Naidu, VN, what. Below that are all consultants. I think about 9 or 12 different firms. Consultants. And only below the consultants you see an official at technician level. The person we met in Harding saw me, who allowed people to repair the potholes, the cement, is below the consultant, which then means the department is run by the consultant. And that can only happen if you put on top an HOD that does not have engineering skill. And below those people, again, you would have people that are underqualified. And as a result of that, then they would pull in the consultants to do the work for them, which then absorbs a lot of money if you do that. Instead of the money going on the ground, it then goes to pay the official and also the consultant. So, what we are then saying, okay, the restructuring has to happen, and then what Honorable Oris was raising, the issue of them having to come back to us, is that they have to come back to us to report now the filling of vacancies with relevant engineering skills. And if we can then decide on when they have to come back to us and report on the filling of vacancies of the new organogram.
If my manager and he said we can ask the department to come at a certain time in terms of the implementation, but we're governed by basically the process of parliament. This report normally takes a couple of weeks, up to 6 weeks to be considered by the House. So we should, anything that we, or the committee, dates that become our possible dates or time frames should include that time, so possibly after 2 months. It takes 2 months for the process and then it goes to the department, and only after that time. So anything then after 2 to 3 months from today, we allow data from that time until possibly the end of the financial year. So this current financial year would be a realistic time frame.
So then to come and report, On the filling of.
Yes, because this report would be considered and it will go from the speakers to them and only after that.
Then takes us back to what Honorable Oris was saying to them say the filling of vacancies with relevant skilled personnel should be reported to us before the end of the financial year. If that's what you're saying.
Well, if you're talking about the next financial year, that's only going to end in March 2013. Am I right? So I would say you must specify by the end of the current financial year, which will be 2013. March, when? March 2013. Yeah, you must specify which year, and otherwise it can go on and on and on.
Are we in agreement with that? That the filling of vacancies with adequately skilled, with we need to highlight that the department is an engineering competence, supposed to be department, and therefore the filling of vacancies also in line with this organogram program has to relate to that filling of vacancies with engineering competent personnel for engineering required skills. We will find a way for all our present time. Can we move on? But it goes back to that if the process started in 2009, so 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, it would have taken 4 years, the department 4 years, to just restructure itself. And we don't, I mean, I don't believe it should take that long for the department to restructure itself. Because it means that all the outcomes that they have put for themselves, that they will do, will only start kicking after they have finalized the restructuring of the department, which will then mean the whole term of administration, they spend restructuring.
Chair, can I perhaps just come in on that point to say, I think when the new administration came in the department, I think it was made very clear that we needed to, in line with the outcomes approach of the new administration then, from the presidential, from the president's point of view, it was made very clear that we needed to go and have a different approach. And because of that, but they then indicated that it doesn't then mean that projects or programs will need to stop. So work has been going on in some of the projects. We might not have huge successes in terms of what is needed, but there has been work that has been ongoing. So we have been restructuring at the same time, and also projects have been going on that one can confirm. It might not be the success that we want, but work has been going on.
Okay. Yeah, we'll defend. Don't defend something that cannot be defended. We've got one of us who's a report. So, most of the respondents are not the respondents. Because bottom line is, you can't restructure for 4 years. That is the bottom line. Even if work has been taking place, restructuring can't take place. Let's continue. Overview. I guess not like parliamentary restructuring. According to Chairperson, we are supposed to have a money. Doesn't take for you. let's go to the outcome. Also, Vina, what I want you to, the department to understand, particularly on your side, Gucci. You must remember Gucci, what did the Auditor General, the Auditor General's comment. The department has got unclear and unmeasurable objectives. And that is what we are highlighting here, that if you don't have the objectives that are clear in terms of when will this be achieved, specific, measurable, you can't. So the Auditor General has said that twice on the audit report, which is a department, Yaga Transport, has got unclear and unmeasurable objectives. You can't measure. Absolutely. So on outcomes now.
Ultimate paragraph. I think I'm just trying to highlight what you are just saying. Nothing new, especially on the scholar transport policy. If you look basically the penultimate paragraph or the one just before the last one, it states what you are just saying. So the pace at which the department transform, it's a bit too slow. It has not been finalized with the policy on scholar transport. And this has been coming for quite some time. I'm just amplifying what you're saying, Jefferson. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Outcome
number four. It's a serious concern. And the second one, chapter 3, also on page 3, outcome number 3, on the non-motorized transport. It's also a challenge. And this has been coming for quite some time. I am almost wanting to say that's abdicated, because non-motorized, about the big cut and so on, it's a non-starter. You know, I understand the funds and so on, but it's a challenge. It just reemphasizes what you raised. Thanks.
And also, Chairperson, just to to say that this goes back to the restructuring process, because as we all know, USIPO was dealing with the scholar transport policy. Now they've changed that, someone is dealing with it, and they want to change all those things and start afresh. So that is where the delay. And I agree with my colleague that this thing goes back to the restructuring. That is too slow. And it's hampering service delivery. Thanks, sir.
Let us read the outcome, Gayin. Let's start with outcome number 2. Please read that outcome. The department recorded several successes pertaining to outcome number 2. This encompasses, inter alia, the finalization of a draft Southern African Development Community VFU testing and overload standard, and the completion and handover of all planned railway police stations to the relevant authorities. However, the transport sector disaster management plan could not be developed owing to the financial constraints. Even this one, the strike, it's still in a draft form, so it's not a complete thing.
In other words, as we wrote this report, it means that the planned the handover has not been done yet. That's one part. And the second one is about the disaster management plan, which has not yet also been developed because of financial constraints. So there are two issues here.
Even on item on outcome number one, a task team for the cost of logistics study framework was established, and the macroeconomic and industry analysis report was finalized. However, the research report outlining the cost of doing business in the transport sector could not be produced by the set day, and there is no reason given. Outcome one, not finalized. Outcome two, not finalized. Outcome three, not finalized.
Not started. Okay, thanks, Chair. Perhaps just to maybe request from the drafters that I think there's a sentence here that might mislead the whole information, but I agree with outcome three. In fact, even the SMT policy was one of my key performance areas in my previous work in policy. I think the sentence I started with was a still draft stage approval and migration. I think it's lost. It should be about scholar transport, not non-motorized transport. But perhaps it's safe to say, Chairperson, that on NMT, what has largely happened is that we've had consultations with all the provinces, and everyone is buying in into the process in terms of elevating this mode of transport, because it talks about creating NMT infrastructure and also creating local economic development for various communities, for instance, how to better use what is can be traditionally defined as a mode of transport which is large for rural people and also rural infrastructure. So this is just waiting for approval processes, but in terms of talking to the broader masses is done. But I think I agree with the sentiment that has been put on the table.
The issue tonight that we are saying here is that it takes forever to develop this policy. When we came in, this policy was already being discussed. I remember that in September 2010, it was 3 years, 8 months, this policy, and we raised that issue. So all that we are saying is that if there is a person who is dealing, what we have observed in that report, there is understanding in such a way that money, that unit of policy development has understand. And to us, it is not understanding, it is underperformance. And we can point to the areas that are showing that there is underperformance. It can take 4 to 5 years to say the issue in relation to the policy development of scholar transport is held back by consultation between our provinces, between the Department of Transport and the Department of Education. Two main maps. It depends on the process that you use. If it was me, I would call a joint main map. In the main map for education, all MECs are there. In the main map for transport, all MECs are there, and we sit down and workshop ourselves on this and arrive at a decision. It wouldn't take 5 years. And allow those people to go back and influence decisions. You lead.
Chairperson, I appreciate your sentiments, but I don't think this one staff member is going to be able to fix it. So
yeah.
I think perhaps we should just finish our report and hand it in, and then we can fight with them every meeting. And also, this issue is covered on page 11. So when we get to page 11, we can make notes on it there. Perhaps we should just move forward with the other complaints.
We are on page 4 now, because we have agreed that all the outcomes are not possible. Policy priorities.
Make them a finding on these outcomes as a serious concern to the committee, to the department, by not having met their obligations. And as such, a recommendation should follow that we would encourage the department to move with a little bit of speed in meeting these outcomes, as they have a negative impact on the service delivered on the ground. I'm not sure whether I'm just thinking aloud on this matter, so that you don't leave it hanging to say they have not met those outcomes, without saying much in terms of how to take the process forward.
I think, Chair, what Honourable Suga is raising is what Honourable Ollis also raised, that this, what you're raising can come as a recommendation when we deal with the page of recommendation in the justice. You're observing the same thing, but just to come under recommendation.
Thanks.
Can we move to the budget analysis?
The staff members in the session. I noticed that the budget for the department is 38 billion rand. And I appreciate that the major transfers they've made, they've tabulated them here so that we see where it goes. Except to say that because that ends up add up to 34 billion. But then I was just asking the other four remaining billion, where is it from the 38? Because if you add up all those five bullet points, they add up to 34.5. And as such, I would wish that to say, they must qualify that by saying that the other remaining amounts goes to these entities or programs, as they've done with the major transfers. But the remainder goes to these entities. Otherwise, I appreciate the way they've crafted it. But also, I think my other concern, chapter 7, on the budget analysis on page 6, just above that, it seems to me the consultants are getting quite a huge chunk, if you look at in terms of the percentage. So it's a serious concern for the committee that the consulting is 51.4% in nominal terms. That goes to consultants and professionals, it means outsourcing. It's quite huge, not unless I read the document wrongly. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable
Zabu, the end girl. Thanks, Chairperson. As much as I also appreciate what Honorable Suga is saying and what has been outlined here, it will be maybe easier for us to understand if they have differentiated in terms of the other entities like your RTMCs, your RTSCB, RTAs, as to how much budget was allocated, is allocated to them. Because we all know that like the RTMC is not performing well due to budget constraints. So maybe if we can get a clarity on that next time. Now I'm just saying it, that they were trying even yesterday that they are being funded by private what sector. But their mother is sitting here with nothing. It's not helping at all. So they were trying to ask if that 4 billion, we can know that how much is being allocated to each agency. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, I just want to add to what Honorable Suga has said, the last paragraph. I think the department has a problem. They are filling the vacancy with unskilled people, you see. And the people who couldn't do anything, that is why they get consultants. It comes out very, very expensive for an entity. If only that could be corrected, that it should be skilled people. At least, I know we don't have those skills, but these things, consultants. I remember when you said there were 100 and something consultants somewhere. There's a carelessness or favoritism or whatever, but this is wrong. We are not taking this.
I fully agree with Honorable Ngele. What the concern she's raising, Chairperson, I've been raising it everywhere where I got this chance, that as a developmental state, we are unable, our state is unable to implement on its own. Even if we can have 100 billion of rents for infrastructure all over the country, 50% of that will go to consultants because the departments are employing, we are having engineers like, for instance, in the public works, engineers wearing suits, sitting in office, but they can't do the actual job on the ground. They have to outsource that to hire other people. So if we can, maybe as a country, try to fast track this issue of skills development so that in the department we can have skilled people who will do the actual job on the ground. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Just correct me if I'm wrong here. The paragraph above program analysis on page 6 talks about the compensation of employees, 316 million. It doesn't qualify that any further. Am I to understand that that is the total compensation for the entire budget vote of nearly 39 billion? Can't be, because that's less than 1% of the total department's budget.
Possible.
I mean, can salaries actually be less than 1%?
can you just clarify that? Because that seems a remarkable statistic. Mm.
The mistake is gone.
That's why you need an accountant.
No. I think that that applies to the problem of industrial administration, not the entire department.
It doesn't say that. You've got all these latest transfers, 1, 2, 3, 4, and the compensation of employees. Which employees? So the report should say administration employees or something. Not that.
Can you repeat that to your friend?
No, I was saying what Honorable Ollis is raising. I think it applies to the administration program and not to the entire department. That is the employees for the administration program of the department, not the entire department. And then you are saying I should just, they should be classified in the report.
Sure, I'm not sure whether the change of identity for me is a good thing or a bad thing, but
honorable combo.
But that's fine, we both knew. But yes, I mean, I take the point, it might be for something else, but I actually think it is quite important that we identify what the salaries component is of the entire budget. So, I mean, more than just a correction or further clarity on this particular point, let's look at it holistically over the entire budget. The same as the goods and services. I mean, a service is not quite the same thing as a good. I'm not sure that if we're procuring goods for the department, we should lump that with the consultancies. I mean, I have to have a breakdown. These are the goods that we've procured. These are the services. These are the consultancies. I mean, one of the figures that really worries me, if you take that same paragraph again, whether it's just for the one, what you said, the budget part one, What is it that you said? The program one. Is that what you said?
If I can just qualify, I mean, what I just said. The information provided here is taken from from that big book called the ENE, Estimates of National Achievement.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are instances, for instance, we have an issue that is not clear. I mean, when you are interacting with that book, You may not have all the answers. That means that one will have to take the issue up for instance, let's say with National Treasury, because this book is published by National Treasury, to get a clarity on some of the issues.
Thanks, Chair. Through you, just to make my point, regardless of what clarity emerges, and we're looking at 316 million rand for salaries somewhere, okay. And then in the very same paragraph, which indicates to me that it might have come from the same point, the same location of expense categorization, it talks about 326 million for consultants. It's only a 10 million rand difference, less than 3%. So it would appear that somewhere in our department, we're spending as much on consultants as we are on salaries, rand for rand. And I mean, that's also... You'd expect the salaries to be a whole lot more, and even if the consultants were a relatively big percentage of that, 10 or 20%, that would be remarkable. But here it's 50-50, if indeed those figures are taken from the same expense category. So I think we actually have to ask ourselves, over each one of these, which we call them on the previous page, entities, what was the breakdown of those three figures? And let's get a picture of what percentage the consultant fees are over every entity. And let's see if there are some that are managing without a very, very great percentage of their budget going to consultants, and compare that to perhaps some of the entities that have the opposite scenario. That'll give us an idea where the staff incapacity lies and where we have to think about more permanent employees and more bang for our buck. I mean, I just believe that in any analysis like that, when you've got, I think you're allowed to 12 different entities you're reporting on your front page, page one, a comparative analysis is going to be the best way to actually get into the meat of the problem and be able to identify where the biggest gaping holes are. So if we could have that kind of clarity provided and that additional information, I think it'll help us in our deliberations quite a lot.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chair. I was going to say that all that we need is clarity on this matter because, hypothetically speaking, at this moment, we know that we need to get clarity so that as we engage on it, we know what we're engaging on. Because we might be incorrect in our hypothesis. So I propose that we get clarity, and then as and when we have clarity, we can then engage the department from a platform of being informed. And yes, indeed, Umangela was correct. The issue of this large chunk of money being used to pay consultants and professionals goes to what you raised earlier on, Chair, the whole issue of restructuring. If things are done correct there, and if restructuring is fully completed with warm bodies there of people who are skilled, they would not have reason to run to so-called professionals because, you see, I'm a layman, and my layman understanding would then tell me that those officials who occupy those senior positions in the department are professionals.
Yeah.
So if we are going to have professionals talking about other professionals who have to be paid, indeed it's a tragedy. It is quite true that the department is an engineering department, but we know, for example, that they've got serious challenges in terms of engineering skills individuals. They suffer in many fields. Like we know that the lack of road engineers in the Department of Transport and the fact plenty of engineering work that takes place in the department, that is not addressed in terms of one body being there. That will make a check.
Chairperson, I mean, this report, we need to close this report because we've got to agree on it. So I think we're in a position now where there's information we don't have. So we've got to do one of two things. We either scratch this paragraph out completely because it's not factual. It gives us false information. Or if one of the staff can tell us what the correct information is now, we can put it in this report. But otherwise, you know, we just scratch this paragraph because it's misleading. And if we send this to Parliament to be voted through and it's got misleading information, then we're going to look stupid. I mean, it cannot be, as my colleague says, that only 297.2 million is spent on the compensation of the employees. Ah, that sentence is false. It's on employees in a certain section, perhaps, or something. But unless we can correct it, we should scratch it, because otherwise we're going to look like a bunch of turkeys. And this report, is it coming back to this committee again, or are we finalising it today? If we're finalising it today, I suggest we put a line through that paragraph and just remove it, and then we will look fine because we won't have said anything wrong. But if we are going to keep it in, then we've got to change this paragraph. You know, as my colleague says, there's figures missing here. We don't know where these staff are, which departments are using the consultant. There's lots we don't know yet.
Mr. Oifa, I think, I mean, if you look at the section budget analysis, we're talking about program. We're not talking, I mean, I'm not referring to the entire department. Because if you go to the table, you will see that in the year that was 2010-11, the previous financial year, the budget allocation for the administration program, but not for the entire program, for the entire department, it was 292.2, and in this financial year, it is 317.5 million. So that clarifies the issue. It's like, I mean, it means we are not talking about the entire department, but we are talking about the administration program of the department.
Yeah, that's not true, I'm afraid. Sorry, Jefferson, that's complete nonsense. The table shows administration, as you said, with those two figures.
But
but then it shows all of the others.
Point of order.
I beg your pardon.
Chairperson, my understanding of the explanation by the researcher is that the administration part of this is within the department as a policy-making department, not all entities. It's for only the Department of Transport. So that is why it's like this. Not all the entities. Each entity has its own budget for its staff and everything. Yes, that's...
Can we read what is written below that? The source of the information. It's the National Treasury. And we have here, it's here. There's the copy.
Thank you, Chairperson. Two things, Chairperson, which I think the issue is trying to say here. When we speak, to my understanding, I'm subject to correction. If we speak administration, we speak firstly from the DG's office, his staff going down to the all levels that are raised here. Now, attached to that are their scales, and they are lumped together into a value of rand and cents. And that value of rand and cents, it means it gives us this amount of money, 317.
Sir, can I say something, please?
I'm out of order.
No, you are not. I'm having a problem of two meetings. We can't go on like this because when Mr. Ellis speaks, we are listening. But if others speak, he just starts a new meeting. Thank you, sir.
So, Chairperson, the from 211 to 12, it was 292. But because of the salary adjustment to that administration, it went up to 317, right? And in that administration of the department, of the senior staff and everybody else in the department, and also in that is the professionals, consultants or professionals. Now, it's also included there. That's why they say out of the 317, 61.7%, 61.4% goes to the consultants of that, because those professionals, because they are ranked into a particular category of director and upwards, because consultants are highly skilled people. That's why we are contemplating that if the department does not have skilled people in senior positions, or if they are there, you can't overuse consultants eating up the amount that you are having. I know they've budgeted that. My concern was around the consultants within that 317.5 million. Now, taken away from that, you've got entities. Their salaries or arbitrations are not part of this, because each and every entity has its own budget in terms of, to my understanding. So I was contemplating the issue of using consultants, because it seems to me consultants are more than the administration in terms of doing the work. Now, Honorable Cromwell is saying it can't be right like that. I'm saying he says it can't be, because it seems as if it's a rent for rent, that the staff or the administration vis-a-vis the consultants. Something is not right. That's also what you are saying ourselves. That's why you are raising this 61.4% as opposed to the real administration of the department. Thank you, Chair.
Before we continue, I was talking on the source of information. Okay, it is National Treasury. And that information cannot be wrong if it is from the National Treasury. What we see here is from the National Treasurer, vote number 37 of transfers, and we have that information here. Can I continue, or you want me to stop?
Okay.
I was then suggesting that we can't then say that it is wrong information that we don't know, because it is tabled here. Even the confusion in terms of what Program 1 relates to, Program 1 administration, it is explained on this document, this one, that it relates to the administrative services to the Minister, Director General, and the Department. That is what administration stands for. And then on page 854, personnel information, there is a breakdown of that. So the issue that you were raising here was in relation to the overuse of consultants as an observation by the department. And we were also relating that to the previous paragraph that we were talking about of the restructuring of the department and filling of those vacancies with skilled people, which will then impact on the reduction of the consultants. And it is important for us to highlight that 61%, 61.4% of that money, which is 326, goes to consultants. And it is a problem. It is a problem because we also have undertaken a study tour to China, and we reported on that SOEs and departments, government departments, actually do the work. You find them on the ground. It's unlike here, where everything is outsourced. And we also should be looking at that in relation to the corruption and how we deal with that. If we outsource everything, then we are opening room for that to happen. Because you don't know who speaks to who. And that is what we are saying, to say the money should rather go, we should rather focus on skills development so that we build the internal capacity instead of being over-reliant on consultants. Honorable Ollis.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm happy with everything that you've said, and I'm fine with what you've said. What I'm not fine with is that paragraph below the bullet points. The paragraph that says the compensation of employees increases from 297.2 million to 316 million. And I'm going to try and explain you just one point why it cannot be. If that is only for administration, if you look up at the chart supplied by National Treasury on that page, it shows you administration is the first line item. It was 292 million, it's gone to 317 million. So your entire administration budget will be 317 million. But according to that paragraph that I have a problem with, the salaries will be 316 million. So there's only 1 million left for rental, for phone calls, for stationery, for petrol, for vehicles, for everything else that the administration department does. So it's impossible. It's completely impossible that the salaries for administration could be 316.1 million if Treasury tells us that the whole administration budget is 317 million. You cannot pay for all the other costs in the administration department with only 1 million rand. It's impossible. So that paragraph has got words missing. That's what I'm saying. The Treasury figures are correct, and the chairperson is correct in what she said. but that paragraph cannot be correct. There must be some words missing in that paragraph that explain it, because otherwise it's impossible. They would be bankrupt in the administration department.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was also trying to look at page 856, you know, but without taking away what the honorable member is saying, maybe if it's possible to request to Akash Patel in the Bagi department, check whether I can find somebody just to come and clarify this to us in terms of this administration, the budget itself. Because if you look at the expenditure trends below this on page 856, in relation to what is written here, it's not very far. Maybe the percentage, sometimes I thought that it's 6.4%, but it says 61. That's why now I wanted that clarity. Maybe if I'm not sure whether Chairperson, we can ask people to go quickly and find a suitable solution and pack this aside so that we move on and give him some time and come back to support whilst we are here.
Honorable Ollis has made a proposal that we can do two things. Take this paragraph out because it creates a confusion. We can't explain it. Because if we are to approve this report today, we can't get anyone to come and explain. Usipho is not the accounting office. Accounting officer is the DG. We take this out, but we then revisit this after the approval of the budget. That would be the most way of What do we say about the administration program received, which increased to 317, constitution 817, budget? On page 7, we also take that out.
I think this one, it's okay, because I'm looking at the percentages on which they speak to. I'm not sure, not unless otherwise. Thank you.
Okay. We keep this one. Then we move to program number 2.
With me on program 2, because there is an explanation on the last paragraph, page 7, as to why the decrease is because of the shifting of funds. I don't have a fundamental because they explain why that movement of funds, the drastic also increase on the sub-program on page 8. Thank you.
But also, in some situations, the system of funds would indicate that there's underperformance.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they realize that they are not going to spend, they then shift the funds to another program. We could keep this here, but then follow it up in terms of the meeting that you will have with the DG. To ask him to explain this. Okay. on page 8.
Interesting, it says this one bodes well for CASA. It means they did do their presentation quite well. That's why they received such a huge chunk of this budget. The only thing that is awaited is the implementation, the accounting for their beautiful plans. I don't have a problem with that, Chairperson.
I guess we're meeting them next week.
Yeah.
Road transport?
You see, on this one, maybe this is one this is one program that will have to sit on its heels, because there's a substantial decrease in real terms in getting their share, and even this paragraph questions where their capability or their capacity to implement or to discharge their responsibilities, which will include inter alia, then they go to town about that. So we have to meet this program form so that they convince us, and maybe substantiate more reasons for this cut. It's too much to have such a decrease from 455.9 million. To a mere, 37.9, if you look at on page 9. So it's a serious matter, which needs to be followed very urgently, and to check their capacity and their skills and everything else that goes with it. Otherwise, it's almost to say let's shut program 4 if they are unable to discharge their responsibilities.
Honorable Oli?
Yeah, Chairperson, these figures, you must remember these figures include the 5.8 billion that was transferred via the special allocation to Gauteng tollers. So the SANRAL e-tolling additional amount was transferred, but it was backdated to the financial year that's already finished, if you remember the finance minister's report. So in fact, if you take that 5.8 billion out of the 21.7, you will see that it actually then becomes an increase. We merely put out a press release to shout about it, and then we suddenly realized we calculated wrong because we forgot about the 5.8 billion. So careful we don't make a sense like, yeah, it's not actually a decrease, it's actually an increase. But the 5.8 billion confuses it because they didn't keep it separate. They transferred it into the pot. And now suddenly last year's budget looks bigger than it really was. Last year's budget wasn't actually 21.7. It was 21.7 minus 5.7 that went to SANRAL. So
okay,
you have to take it out.
Can we reflect that in this report, so that it clarifies the issue?
Probably a good idea, yeah.
It would assist a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that we don't then reflect this as a decrease. We reflect that there is an increase. The 21.7 includes the 5.8, the SANRAL, and then we minus that to then arrive at the actual increase. Which will then take away the last sentence if that is the situation. This day, Chris raises a question as to whether the SAP program will be able to effectively and efficiently discharge its responsibilities. We no longer need that because of that explanation. Okay? Check that paragraph out. Then, I mean that sentence. Program number 5, civil aviation. Okay, before we go to program number 5, can we go back to the rule? An observation on this relates to the oversight work that we conducted last year, particularly when we talk of road engineering standards. What we saw in Northwest, where the cars are moving on where the pedestrians are supposed to be walking, and where they are supposed to the cars to travel, it's full of potholes. Then it raises the question of the effectiveness of the road engineering standards. How do they monitor that? And also the fact that we visited Harding twice and found not even contractors, but the provincial team, KZN provincial team of the Department of Transport, repairing potholes of an asphalt, blacktop asphalt road using cement and sand
and concrete.
Raised the issue, it continued. And the results of that are it doesn't repair, it actually damages the road infrastructure. The money that will be spent to actually fix that road is more than what would have been spent to repair those potholes. But also we are lucky that no accident has happened in that area. But the social impact of that and economic impact is that it damages the tires of the cars. So then we question the effective observation is, if you relate that to our oversight, what we have seen when we visit the provinces, and then it would mean that we are not getting value for money from this program. Because it puts all these things down, it gets the budget for that, but when you go down on the ground to see the impact of that, it's not there. Also, I don't understand what they mean about road oversight. It means that we shall have also to revisit this and call the relevant DDG to come and unpack together with the DJ to come and unpack this. Can we then move to program number 5? Number 6. my observation here doesn't relate to the work that, to the budget in relation to the work that is currently being done. I have no problem with that. I, however, have a problem that with the fact that South Africa has got the longest coastline. And the size of the land sea that we have is 3 times our land. Now, the only service that we are providing through Swansea here is that of providing the security and ensuring that the ships from other countries are provided with security, and we are not participating. That then brings us to bullet number 2, the maritime infrastructure and industry development. Observation is that the disinvestment of South Africa in the maritime transportation, where 57 ships were sold in 1993, has actually disadvantaged South Africa. In terms of job creation, as well as in terms of effective utilization of the longest coastline. The recommendation that would go with that is that we reconsider investing as a country and having and participating in the maritime transportation. That would result with job creation. Sometimes indicated that we could create between 2012 and 2022 405,000 jobs. If we were to focus on participating in the maritime transportation. Those are the only 2 things that I would propose we add. The observation that we are not participating. We have 3 times the size of land on our sea land. There are minerals in there, there is fish in there, and there's transportation of goods that we are not participating in. And then under recommendations, we recommend that we reconsider invest, the country reconsiders reinvesting in the maritime industry, in the maritime transportation.
Also, when you were making those points, remarks, raising the issues of transport on the cluster yesterday, it was quite good, and I thought that if all of us can be consistent in raising those matters, well, some members who are not of this committee were just shocked when you were raising the statistics and the manner in which our coastal line is underutilized by ourselves. Doing a disfavor. It was just shocking to some members. I'm saying you are quite correct, Chair, that we need to talk about this matter very sharply. So,
okay, then the program number 7, public transport.
Thank you. This is obviously a very, very important program because it deals with buses and transporting people that desperately need the transport. I think it's very correct to emphasize here the allocation for rural and scholar transport program decreases by 42.3%. I think we should make a fuss about that, really. I think that's shocking. School kids are the most vulnerable. They need that transport. They're not getting it. It's collapsed in the Eastern Cape. And now they want to take the money away. And I really think as a committee we should protest this somehow. We should put a statement in here saying we don't think that's good enough. It's not acceptable for the kids to have their transport taken away. They must rather take something else away if they want to cut. But to really take away from school kids is not acceptable. And I don't know why the department has structured it in this way to cut the scholar transport. If the transport is there, then why cut it? It should not be cut. It should be left. And I really think that we should urge the DG to relook at this. Or otherwise, we say in our report that we think this is not acceptable because school kids are going to struggle to get to school and they are the most vulnerable. They need this.
I definitely agree with Honorable Ellis, Chair, because the degrees on this matter is actually in total contrast to outcome 3 of the Department of. I think it's in total contrast because if you go through outcome 3, what they intend and what they claim to be standing for and intend to achieve on outcome 3, it's definitely diametrically opposed to what you see here, which is the degrees. Because my understanding, which is exactly what I think in outcome 3, is that there would be focus in rural areas. But if you look at what is then unfolding, which is the degrees, it's diametrically opposed to outcome 3. So we definitely have to make a fuss about it.
Chapter 10. I agree with members. Was the political side effect of this matter is that the high rate of dropouts on farm schools is too much because those vehicles that were ferrying these people's kids to and from have stopped. As a result, kids are staying at home, no schooling. On the other side, it increases the illiteracy rates in South Africa. That's why we are always under par or under average as compared to the statistics that were released some time ago on this matter. The second one also, it has got a direct impact on the feeding scheme. So it means a recommendation would be that both the Department of Transport and Basic Education should try and come to an agreement to effect that memorandum of understanding or an agreement that who is who in this. Because remember that there was that kind of blurring responsibilities. The one must teach as a core business. The one must do its core business by transporting kids. So this matter should also come to a clarity so that we avoid this issue. So I agree, Chairperson, we cannot reduce, either we need to increase. You see, also this relates to a policy that I heard that those who will be assisted in terms of the transport should be in a radius of 5 kilometers. If you are less than 5 kilometers from school, then you can't be provided with transport. But if you are away by 5 kilometers, then it will be assisted. My point is that those kids, the great, what we call the very low, the young kids from 7 to 12, they had to walk these 5 kilometers on foot, unfriendly weather, because the policy that the department is having, especially in provinces, is saying you will not be provided that transport if you live within that radius of 5 kilometers. But if you are beyond that, then you can benefit. That needs also to be looked into so that we assist our kids, especially from farm and rural communities. Thank you, sir.
I agree fully with my colleagues who have spoken before me. This Chairperson take us back to the fact that in this country, it seems as if we don't have equal rights. But the Bill of Rights is clear that all citizens have equal rights. So why am I saying this, Chairperson? It is because rural people are treated as third-class citizens in this country, especially for their kids. In rural areas and farm, in rural and farm areas, learners walk more than 5 kilometers to school. Some have to cross these dangerous rivers to school because of lack of infrastructure. Then, Chairperson, I just want to say I agree with my colleagues, and I think the department needs to look into this matter as a matter of urgency, because our kids out there in the rural areas are being abused, are being raped on their way to school, and that is killing our nation, because we know that the future of this country lies on those young children. So I think the department really need to look into this matter and take it seriously as it is, because we cannot turn a blind eye into this issue. We need to address it as a matter of urgency. Thank you, Chairperson, because all those kids, whether in rural or urban, they have the same equal rights. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think I also agree with that, those observations, that it cannot be correct to have a decrease. But I also want us to look at the complementary role of the Department of of Transport to the service delivery priorities of this term of administration from 2009 to 2014 in relation to education and health, that the provision of access roads to schools and clinics is one area that is not coming out strongly in the department. That is the observation. And the Department of Transport has got a complementary role to play in ensuring that we improve health and education services in the country. So this is in direct contrast with that. The other issue is that when you look at the at program number, this one, program 7, and program 4, road transportation, you don't see the alignment in terms of the prioritization of the road infrastructure, access roads, schools and clinics under program roads, which would then, even if the transport is provided, the scholar transport, it then addresses the quality of services. If you go to the Eastern Cape, those children are transported in buses, mainly because taxis and the transport that is supposed to be used to transport people, those people, because of the standard of roads, don't want to use their cars. So it is the people with the goods vans that are designed to transport goods are actually used to transport school children, and that is a result of the road network. The same applies to KwaZulu-Natal. All the provinces that have got a rural network that is bad, you find those scholar children, those that are still transported, are transported to those and have a squash-like condition. So the quality, the observation is that there is no alignment between Program 7, public transport, particularly on rural transport and scholar transport, to Program 4 of roads to facilitate the access or to facilitate accessibility to schools and clinics, as well as ensure that the quality of service and the type of cars that are used to transport sick people in rural areas and school children to schools is not, it's a vehicle that is designed to transport the person, not the van that are transporting them.
In suburban these vehicles that are called vans, in fact, they are not, they are prohibited to carry passengers in terms of by law. There is an act of 1955 that prohibits them, because they are saying if you do carry a passenger at the back of a van, it means you must not make profit in terms of payment. It must be treated as goods. Now, it has got a direct impact on the insurance of the bank or of that particular individual who is being carried at the back of that van. So I'm trying to say that we need to look also into the laws of the country that ferry these kids to school, because that's why there are roadblocks for vans being stopped, because the traffic officers are rightfully doing their job, because of they know that those buggies are not supposed to carry people by law. If one carries those kids, it's through Samaritan work. So I'm saying the laws need to be also looked into that, so that we review them. Because there are no designed official buggies that must carry, can carry those kids. Thank you.
Then, scholar transport also includes Shovagalul. And our expectation was that that would be aligned to the new growth path and observation. We now go to public entities. You live now?
Yeah, very special. I'll show you how the fourth person I have.
Pardon?
I'm sure you have the fourth person I asked. Big care is an introduction. Sorry, we have to be.
Okay. Public entities.
I'm saying what you see on the okay. What you see on the 13 million, It's for the unit in DOT called Scholar Transport and Rural. But what currently happens with regard to scholar transport is that Treasury transfers through equitable shares to the provinces funding, which is generally for public transport, and scholar transport is an item there. And also the ones that are still in education, it's part of school infrastructure, so it's transferred and allocated there. So what is here, and perhaps what should be the point, is that how can the DOT support provinces through their own dedicated funding? So on average, what is allocated by provinces for scholar transport is around 250 million, right? Which in total cost, I can provide the members with a table that indicates the cost in a previous financial year. On average, in the whole country, scholar transport is around 4 billion, right?
Is there a decrease or no decrease? 42.37.
Yeah, I will touch to the problems here and to say the reason why you do not see a cost which can be projected to say cover scholar transport in the country, because we have not come to have a framework of some sort that will say this is how we'll address scholar transport. Hence, you see even the focus is on something else.
Transport sub-program decreases drastically by 42.3%. The gentleman, is there a decrease or not? You remember on the previous bill, who only said, no, that is not a decrease. It's a problem, Muti. That includes the money, Yaga Sandra, the 5.8 billion that was given to Sandra, which then made us to arrive at a different conclusion. We are asking you the same, which is here, Kuna Wino 42.3.
No, there is no difference.
What is the situation? Explain us.
The situation as it is right now is. No, I'm saying the current allocation as it is, it has not gone up, because remember this was the first year in implementation of this new unit called Scholar Transport in DOT. It has never existed before. Yes, so this is how they started now. So there has been no increase whatsoever. It has been increased in terms of what largely has been given to Sandra right now. That makes to be an increase, but the actual unit, there has been no increase.
Decrease?
In fact, not even a decrease, I think. Yeah.
Where it says the allocation for rural and scholar transport sub-program decreases drastically by 42.3% in nominal terms and 45% in real terms, from 13 million in 2012 to 7.5 million in
2013. Yes. My major concern, because I'm just reading from here, is because these funds, the 13 million, is too little for the country, for rural areas. 13 million for 9 provinces. It's a cause of concern to us. It means our rural areas might not be
might not benefit all of them in terms of this allocation, given the size and the distance of our provinces in terms of their ruralness and the traveling thereof. So it's a major concern. My other concern is that, you see, Kulendo Ketongo Sipo, but it's not written anywhere here. Kulendo Ketongari. Because we are reading just from here. And I know you are more proper again of eating into what is the status, is there any increase or decrease? And it does not come very clear to that. But no, there's no increase, there's no decrease. It means we are at the same level. So I'm saying I'm reading from here because this is going to become a public document to say an allocation of 13 million is going to be allocated for this rural and scholar transport. And if you not unless Uchimati included that equitable share that you spoke about, that it should be reflected here, and it's not here in the document, in the report itself. How do you strike the balance in the two so that it becomes authentic, what you are saying?
What you have here is what is the allocation for DOT as such.
Mm.
Yes. That is the first point. The second one is that, as I've indicated, scholar transport is allocated as part of the equitable shares by Treasury to provinces. So it won't necessarily come here because we are not implementing scholar transport as it is right now, because it's still done by two departments, which is Provincial Education Department and Provincial Department of Transport. Even the National Education Department, they do not even receive such, because it goes as part of a port for instance, for school infrastructure in a province. So in this case, this was an allocation for the unit in DOT that manages scholar transport, which means from a national point of view.
Well, if you say it's a unit within the department that has been allocated 30 million,
yes.
Well, it clarifies, because you know, the way it is crafted here, I feel wrong. You see, if
yes.
I was a layman in the street, it will say 30 million is allocated to exactly.
Mm.
Now we're now getting a unit within a DOT, which clarifies, I'm sure maybe it needs to be put into perspective this matter so that it does clarify. I think it's 2 million.
Yeah. Apologies, Mr. Lang, because seemingly the analysis is shy by this. The whole process here, but not for the human budget vote. Beyond the human direct to the accountant. But the one about the human priority that they don't have a message. This is something that is something that is suggesting. And yes, it is to the committee that are approving the capacity to move them forward. And some of the issues that we're coming in rather since the beginning of the community, he has backed the only overseas. I think we cut it off in danger with this. But the thing that I have suffered is the overseas. Mark Boomer, not only 3 days ahead. Let's have a way to deliver the budget. I know it's a new leader, not me, but not something that the budget. All put in place. Why in the effort can't we see the effort? We started to plan.
Well, it is a decrease that has been.
That is what This is what people are saying for this program. That is, even if it is an allocation to the unit, this unit, this is taking the responsibility of dealing with rural and smaller transport. That decrease is 42.3%. Nina, I was going, maybe thinking about it, whether you would explain with it. What work was done by the unit at the inspection stage that required the 50 million is now no longer needs an increase. It requires a decrease.
What I can say is that, for instance, you will see they make a development of safety standards. The unit is still going to do the work. And what has happened is that part of what they mentioned as the scholar transport policy has been done. Yes. Perhaps that might be the reference to the decree that potential you would have because it's a
system.
What are the different systems? No, I'm saying a draft has been put on the table, so it won't even need to outsource or one extra resource to join the system.
If Ningazi would to add, when there are bands and decrease the loan from 13 million to 7.5 million, take this against us. If there is no explanation, because what was our understanding, we had misunderstood, because the Zimbabwean is not just a it can't decrease the scholar transport, because we were thinking about that you were referring to the money that is returned to transport, and that is not what you are referring to. You are referring to the 10 million that is used in the unit at national level, and it has got nothing to do with it. What needs to come in here, which is how much is transferred, the allocation for solar transport, maybe unpack the work done by the unit, but the unit doesn't receive money from transfer. For transporting scholars. Why are you shaking your head?
No, I'm not shaking, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah. Yes, you know I observe it with the language because it tells me a lot about what the person is speaking or whether we are in the same wavelength. What we are saying is that explain that the unit doesn't receive money from Treasury for the transportation of scholars. That money goes direct from Treasury to the province. It doesn't clarify with us. We are not responsible for whatever happens in terms of lack of service provision or poor service provision. We don't agree to that. However, the unit is responsible for policy formulation and regulatory framework. Yes. So to do that work, then it receives 13 million. And because the largest amount of work has been covered, even the decrease, the 42.3% decrease, will not have a negative impact. That's what you need to say. Did you get that, Kaya? That's what we put here. So that it is clear that the 13 million was for policy development and regulatory framework formulation. And the 42.3% increase would not have a negative impact, because it's the budget that covers the remaining amount of work that has to be done.
Let me show you our page 871 of the first document, which you are clarifying, which says that rural and scholar transport develops and reviews rural, scholar, and non-motorized transport strategies and coordinates and evaluates their implementation. This sub-program at the staff of complement of 13 and a total budget of 13 million rand, of which 89.7% was spent on goods and services such as draft scholar transport policy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it means an incremental implementation plan is being developed and will intensify transport service delivery in six rural district municipalities. So I'm saying we are in agreement with what we are saying. So the Lima Liesa program in a setting members. Do you see that one?
But then, can you have a look at where is he? Sorry, you have to.
Chair, can I make that input? Oh, mm-hmm. I was saying on recommendations, I think it's 9.2. Policies that need to be rectified and overhauled, that point. I was saying, for me, I would think it would be proper if we can reflect as example which policies are we speaking to, because the entities when they presented, they were very clear
mm-hmm.
on those policies.
Mm-hmm.
If a person who reads this is not one of us here,
mm-hmm.
he would not know which policies we are talking to.
Mm-hmm.
So
under recommendations.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
under recommendations. It would be correct if we say policies like this and this and this,
mm-hmm.
etc. Because there might be others that would be raised by other entities one day in one of our sessions. Thanks, sir.
If you get that, under point 9.2, Honorable is saying entities were very clear in what policies need to be not to be rectified,
to be amended,
or overhauled. And then we list those policies, like the land traffic. We have
Arco, I think, as well.
Both ERCMC and can fund the amendment that they would like to. We also have identified on our own that a policy, a national policy on rural development, on rural travel road, on the upgrading of the travel road, is currently informed by the number of cars, 200 cars, and it contradicts the mandate of the department in relation to social and economic development and unlocking the development potential in the rural areas. And therefore, it is one also a policy that should be considered for renewal. All that we are saying is this entity is identified, and then we are recommending the department to consider reviewing because we are not supposed to say they should review. We say they should consider reviewing. Then we are also saying that recommendation in the department should review to prioritize the issue of using internal capacity, different of engineering skills, and reduce the use of consultants. We should consider that, and also we are saying my recommendation also they should reconsider investing. The department should reconsider investment of South Africa, reconsider reinvestment of South Africa in the maritime transportation in line with the new growth path.
I was going to say, what are we saying about the request from RTMC and RTIA in terms of funding?
Because it will pass it very early in the institutional arrangement. Is there any other thing that you feel there is not? Oh, the last one for me. Is Sunrun or one we should recommend the department? I'm just in the old. Currently, the minister is pushing for Sunrun to also be involved in the development of the road infrastructure in rural area. It's a good thing. But in terms of the act, that will not be allowed. We have also been complaining with it. The Sunrun is focusing on national roads and then well class roads and then third class infrastructure in the rural area. we should then say that we should reconsider. We have noticed the observation is that the absence, the non-participation of SANRA in the development of rural road infrastructure creates an imbalance. In terms of quality of roads, the poor rural areas remain with the poor standard, and the national roads get neglected. And it leads to the debate that you can't then say umuntu wasekhaya who's not serviced by SANRA to be penalized to pay for the well class roads that the county. For if that was to go to do away with AMA ETOL or whatever, it would then require, we also have to review the mandate of SANRA if we want SANRA to participate in the development of the rural road infrastructure and impart in knowledge. Then mind, for that to happen, Masipala should set right and request SANRA. And if Hamasong in terms of the minister is being shifted from the department to SANRA, but there is no national policy that allows that to happen. So what I'm then saying is this. In order to deal with the uneven levels of development in the road infrastructure, when it relates to urban and rural infrastructure, there is a need for SANRA money to be received. And therefore, the recommendation then would be that the department should reconsider reviewing the mandate of SANRA to include rural road network development and the funding model. Then the other year was that the UPED is still going to the bank of the city. They are in front of the market.
Thank you. Gracias. Thank you.